You're listening to Radio Aryan.
Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be. In the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One word more for signal token, whistle up the marching tune. For your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon. With your pike upon your...
Greetings from the Northwest homeland, comrades. The date is Thursday, December 20th, 2018. I'm Andy Donner, and you're listening to Radio Free Northwest.
For the blessed warming light, farmers passed along the valleys like the banshee's lonely croon, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon.
All right, to kick it off, since there is only one Thursday left this year, that show must be our end-of-year music show, which makes today our Christmas episode. So first and foremost, a Merry Christmas and Happy Yule to all of you observing, and for that matter, to all of you not. For one reason or another, ranging from rejection on the part of others or outright frightfully ideologically unacceptable situations, the holidays are easily the worst time of year for many white nationalists, and if nothing else, I want to see if I can't help you all out with that just a little bit today. As I said opening this show, I'm certain this time of year is difficult for probably the vast majority of white nationalists, simply because the social and familial isolation at times can be unbearable. Many years ago, I was given some relevant advice in a religious setting. This advice had to do with relationships, all sorts of them in fact, but especially family and other close relationships, and how they're really supposed to work. Broken relationships are perhaps the largest source of discomfort and emotional hurt that any of us will ever encounter, and as I've said repeatedly, that does apply this time of year more so than any other. Obviously, none of us can completely fix these problems, but there is a way to put ourselves on the right track, and it's this. Consider where the actual joy in any sort of close relationship comes from. Is it you receiving something from the other person? I mean, okay, if you're a small child, that makes sense. But if you're an adult, especially a white nationalist adult who understands their racial responsibilities, you should understand that it is your responsibility, first and foremost, to meet the other person's needs. This applies most of all in a marriage, but generally to your immediate family, and then less so to your friends and larger social circles. Now, to the uninitiated, this might seem counterintuitive, because it's very natural for someone unfamiliar with this subject to immediately ask me why it is then that if that's the case, if you're supposed to be giving, why is it that isolation and even worse rejection is so genuinely awful to experience? It's that if you're isolated, rejected, or just outright ignored, there's nobody around for you to give of yourself to. And you're naturally stifled and frustrated in your attempts to have normal, healthy relationships with friends and family. And again, all of this is completely understandable. After all, even if it happened through misguided and unhelpful ways, you genuinely were trying to do the best you possibly could for you and yours by being a white nationalist, and you wanted to enthusiastically share of your white nationalism with those you care about so that they too could benefit from it. And in response, they mocked you and scorned you and cut you off. Of course you should be upset about this. And here you are in a situation with nobody to share the good things about yourself with. When I find myself in a similar state of being, I remind myself of one thing, and I find I'm able to keep going. We're not really alone. In fact, there's an entire race of people, your people, that need whatever care and attention you can afford. What I can promise you is that it is precisely the sort of relational outlet you're looking for and are being denied. And should you choose to make use of that, you will find it more efficacious than you could possibly imagine. Now, as I've said previously, I hope that's as helpful to as many of you as it possibly can be. I, strangely enough, have been able to maintain nearly all of my familial relationships despite my white nationalism. Now, granted, this is because the members of my family, both in my parents' generation and in my generation, have done everything they can to make a mess of themselves, so I still look pretty reasonable, but it is what it is nonetheless. If you have some close relationships that have not succumbed to the typical white nationalist pattern of family mess-ups, do what you can to keep them around. You'll find it well worth the effort. Merry Christmas and Happy Yule, comrades.
This is Comrade Jason, and I have several things for you this show as we come to the close of 2018 in this Christmas season. 2018 was an amazing year, and in January I'll be doing a recap of 2018 and a look forward to 2019, which, just like this one now coming to an end, will be another year closer to victory and freedom for our race. First off here, I'm going to play what longtime listeners of Radio Free Northwest will probably have come to expect out of the Christmas show. Harold's recounting of the spontaneous battlefield Christmas truce of 1914 between white brothers forced to fight at the behest of their societal masters in the first great European fratricidal war. Harold told this story every Christmas show, I think, and thought it a proper semi-tradition for us because of its importance. This is one of Harold's segments and stories that has always meant the most to me, and I can honestly say I hold a gratitude deep in my soul that I will not die never having learned of it, which in America was always a real possibility. For those of us in America, we hardly come across reference to this, and it is simply not a part of our consciousness, but I have it on good authority from British and other European friends that they still remember it on the other side of the pond, and it has a prominence in the European psyche that I hope our brothers and sisters never lose. They still remember. And for those of you new to RFN, now you can too.
Since we're coming up to Christmas, it's time for our one Christmas story. Now, I've mentioned the story more than once on this program and played this song, but although these events happened 99 years ago, it's one that I think needs to be retold at every Yuletide season, because this falls into the we must never allow ourselves to forget category. World War I was one of the most horrific experiences that Western man and Western civilization has ever undergone. In many respects, it was worse, I think, than World War II, because it came at the end of almost a century of virtually unbroken peace and prosperity and economic and cultural growth in Europe and here in America. Now, sure, there were a few hiccups, like the Franco-Prussian War, but basically for almost 100 years, everything was on an even keel, pretty much, and the white man was free to be all that he can be, especially in such places as Germany, Great Britain and her colonies, and here in America. One of the saddest stories in history, I believe, is the story of the Christmas Truce of 1914. Now, this occurred on Christmas Eve, 5 months into the war, when men on both sides of the trenches stopped fighting and held spontaneous Christmas celebrations instead. No official ceasefire was declared, but more than 100,000 British, French, and German troops participated in the unofficial truce along the length of the Western Front. The truce began with Christmas carols. The German troops had put candlelit Christmas trees on the trench parapets in many places along the front, and at 11 o'clock, which was midnight in Berlin, many of them began to sing Stille Nacht, Silent Night. The British soldiers listened and then responded with carols of their own. And then the soldiers started shouting Christmas greetings to each other across the barbed wire, and from there it went on to general comments and conversation, which was possible because in some cases those damn trenches were so close that it was actually possible to communicate over the distance. Now, gradually, men on both sides of the trenches put down their weapons and started spontaneous Christmas celebrations. Their officers ordered the men to keep shooting, but the truce spread all up and down the front lines. Men climbed from the trenches to shake hands in no man's land. They shared food packages from home, traded gifts and souvenirs such as buttons and hats, and they ate and drank together. On Christmas morning, soldiers again sang Christmas carols, and signboards dotted the trenches. Since more German soldiers spoke English than English soldiers spoke German, the signboards were written mostly in English. Sometimes the English was simple, like, you no fight, we no fight. Men exchanged cigarettes, chocolates, cakes, sausages, and the Germans in one sector even rolled out a barrel of beer into the middle of no man's land to share with the British and the French. The soldiers played football and enjoyed the freedom to move about without danger. The truce also allowed burial parties to safely retrieve recently fallen soldiers and bring them back behind their lines. Both sides held joint services for their fallen comrades. In many sectors, the Christmas 1914 truce lasted through Christmas night, and in others it lasted until New Year's Day. In years to come, the officers on both sides made sure that there was no repetition of the informal truce by ordering huge bombardments all along the Western Front beginning on Christmas Eve that lasted through Christmas Day. This episode has always haunted me because it was probably the last time in history that Germans and Englishmen met as equals and friends. And from then on, the curtain of Jewish propaganda and demonization of the Germans descended, and the poison of it still hangs in the air between Germany and the rest of the world like a gas attack in the trenches. Anyway, in memory of that night and day 99 years ago, when our two peoples last exchanged the hand of friendship without a wall of filthy Jewish lies to divide us, this is Arnie Dormsgaard.
O Tannenbaum, O Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter. O Tannenbaum, O Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter. Du grünst nicht nur zur Sommerzeit, nein, auch im Winter, wenn es schneit. O Tannenbaum, o Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter. Mägdelein, o Mägdelein, wie falsch ist dein Gemüte. O Mägdelein, o Mägdelein, wie falsch ist dein Gemüte. Du schwurst mir treu in meinem Nun arm ich bin, gehst du zurück. O Mägdelein, o Mägdelein, wie falsch ist dein Gemüte. Tannenbaum, wie treu sind deine Blätter.
Okay, comrades, on to some Christmas cheer. I'll be playing Christmas music throughout the show, including some of my own personal favorites. This first song is a new one to me, but particularly appropriate for us here in the homeland, and a Christmas favorite of this region of the country. It is called Christmas in the Northwest, and is sung by an artist by the name of Brenda Coots White. It was sent to me to play by the HQ Group, and I looked her up online to learn more about her. She was born in the Caribbean, but her family moved early in life to the American Pacific Northwest, and has said she always considered herself a Northwest native. In 1987, she was given an opportunity through her connections in film and the broadcast industry to write a song to benefit the Seattle Children's Hospital and Regional Medical Center. This song became the main theme for a program that was produced locally and aired on Seattle's ABC affiliate, KOMO-TV, on December 18, 1987. Proceeds from the song have gone to support medical treatment of children throughout the region, and the song has become a staple of Christmas in the Northwest. Brenda leads us now into a three-song run for a little Christmas cheer for all of us.
Christmas in the Northwest is a gift God wrapped in green.
The best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
Have a holly jolly Christmas, it's the best time of the year.
Down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, yes sir, once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
Said, is it really Santa Claus? Really, really Santa? Is that really Santa? Really, really Santa? Is that really Santa Claus? Really, really Santa?
Hope he thinks that Santa Claus.
I picked him up and put him on Santa's lap, and then he pulled the pillow out of his shirt. He yanked the beard right on off of his chin, and in his eyes I could see he was hurt. Said, you're not naughty Santa Claus, really not Santa Claus. You're not naughty Santa Claus, you're really not Santa.
Being
naughty Santa Claus, you're really not Santa.
He's just helping Santa Claus.
Santa Claus, a real, real Santa. He's helping Santa Claus, a real, real Santa. He's just helping Santa Claus, a real, real Santa.
He's just helping Santa Claus.
He's just helping Santa Claus, a real, real Santa. He's just helping Santa Claus, a real, real Santa. He's just helping Santa Claus.
Good evening, comrades. Tonight I'm going to be discussing Arian Imperium, The Worldview by James O'Meara. Now, this is an author associated with Countercurrents who recently moved to Hungary. This book has an imposing title, and it promises a lot. Now, I often look for publications like those put out by Countercurrents because even though I talk about history and the past quite a lot, I really am very interested in the future. Now, this book introduces two authors, the first being far and away the most interesting. This is an author by the name of Renza Georgiani, and he wrote two books, one entitled Prometheus and Atlas, and the other The World State of Emergency. Now, according to O'Meara's overview, Prometheus and Atlas seems to get lost in theory built on speculation. And actually, thus far, Prometheus and Atlas seems to be one of those books that kind of reminds me of the book that I read about the Cathars several years ago. That is to say, it might be interesting, but is it really applicable? However, according to O'Meara, The World State of Emergency deals with actual reality. Georgiani notes that clearly technology is becoming increasingly advanced. And he talks about things like biotech, space exploration, and virtual reality. And Georgiani notes that the current world is not designed for this. And he's very eager to have legislation that will manage all these new realities. In addition, Georgiani is looking at democracy, and he sees that it's not suited to the current demographic changes. So Georgiani believes that world government is the only answer. Now, it's interesting to note that Georgiani is a Zoroastrian. Now, as we all likely know, when the Muslims came to power in Iran, a lot of the Zoroastrians would move to India and would become what's called the Farsi population. Now, the Iranians, if you've ever met any Iranians, especially the Zoroastrians, they're very proud people. And it's not surprising that this individual would imagine a world ran out of Tehran. And he really sees the world hopefully uniting under a pan-Aryan banner that would be spearheaded by Iranians and Kurds. And of course, the Kurds are an ethnic group from Iraq. And Georgiani notes that currently much of the world is under Indo-European culture and language anyway. Now, this is a very interesting proposal, but given the rejection of anything like this in the current real-world ideology, the only question is whether this idea would actually ever be embraced. And it's certainly an idea that seems practical and at least theoretically implementable, although the current population in Iran, I think, is very different from the ancient population, I would imagine. But again, I could certainly see an Iranian feeling this way. Now, after that rather mind-bending introduction to Georgiani, we next move over to a French aristocrat by the name of de Rincourts. Now, this is an intellectual who's much like Spengler, and his dates are from 1918 to 2005. De Rincourt is an author that tends to see America as rather an old country instead of being a new country. And he says that America is an old country because it prolongs Christian Europe. Now, this is an author who would remark that the Puritans, with all of their industriousness and structure, were a group of people that actually came to resemble the Orthodox Jews. Now, I know I've read this comment somewhere, and in fact, it's not a very surprising comment in that the Puritans themselves would always speak of a New Jerusalem, and they were always talking about how they really wanted to emulate the Jews of the Bible. Now, Derencourt believed that democracy could only be relevant or workable in small spaces, and he thought that manifest destiny would render the American people very much divided, and that the people would look for leadership and end up ultimately putting power in the hands of only a few. Now, this author was active probably maybe back in the 40s, say, he really didn't foresee the demographic changes, but then those were not foreseen by very many. Now, because this author talks so much about power, O'Meara discusses a play that was very popular in the summer of 2018, and it was an anti-Trump play that dealt with the assassination of Caesar. Now, O'Meara notes that Caesar was actually the choice of the masses, much like Trump was, or at least Trump was a choice of the white masses. And O'Meara talks about how the old families in Rome were very much disappointed with Caesar. And the famous attack in the Senate was really a last desperate attempt for them to hold on to power at a time when clearly they could see they were more and more unable to. Now, of these two authors, I have to say I'm most drawn to Giorgiani's World State of Emergency. I tend to fear that Prometheus and Atlas, as I said before, may lack enough grounding in the real world to make it really relevant to the needs of this show. Now, I found this book to be surprisingly brief, and indeed I also found sections of this book that were taken directly from the Countercurrents website. In some ways, I feel that this book tends to be more of a promotion of other books than an end in itself. But I have to admit that I am now inclined to investigate Giorgiani's work. Now, as I've said before, futurism is a subject that we really don't factor in enough. And to state the obvious, it really presents both opportunities and challenges. And as I said before, I'm particularly, in some respects, alarmed by the advancements that are coming about in today's world with both biotech and space exploration, because I worry that these things are coming about at a time when we're clearly both out of power and losing our grip on power. And all of these thoughts make me really lament 1945 all the more, because I see how behind we're getting, or could be potentially getting, at such a critical time. So I hope you found this book review interesting, and I thank you for listening. So have a good evening, and hail victory, comrades.
Music has been around in all human societies throughout time, but it took the white man to systematize the knowledge and the science of musical theory that we enjoy today in so many forms and which is used by all peoples of the earth. Another white invention and innovation from which the entire world has benefited. Arguably, the most beautiful forms of music come from our people, however. And I'm in the mood for a little bit of musical beauty and the feelings of reverence for the beauty and wonderfulness of our race that flow from it.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of the dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining.
Oh, hey.
For my segment, I want to play off of Andy's intro piece to the show. During this season of joy and gift-giving, I do think it appropriate to realize that, as racially aware white men and women, we have a special gift to give to our loved ones and friends, and indeed to our society at large, and that is the gift of racial understanding. Now, this is not a small gift. It is, in fact, key to most of the functioning of the world and society, and its importance cannot really be overstated. However, it is not a gift that is always or even often well received. The messenger far too often is the one to be shot. However, when I think about what racial awareness has given me in my life, I am overcome with feelings of joy and thankfulness, feelings that I think you will agree are entirely appropriate to the Christmas season. As we grow from children into adults, and are both expected and required to assume custodianship of our society and world from older generations, we of the modern era are unfortunately hampered by a huge failing of those prior generations and of current society. Children growing up, coming of age in these modern times, are almost guaranteed to be stripped and robbed of a proper and healthy racial understanding of how the world actually works. I know that this was the case for me over 40 years ago, and it's even worse today. As a consequence, this lack of a racial understanding disconnects us from our people, from our history and our culture, and the unique attributes of our people from which the entire world has benefited so greatly. As a consequence of this lack of racial understanding and this disconnectedness from true knowledge of the greatness of our people and how our greatness is based in who we are at a fundamental and racial level, our next generations end up severely handicapped in our ability to effectively interpret and interact with this world of ours. But an understanding of race is of fundamental importance to society and the world. Race precedes society and culture. Race is biological and arrives first when any child is born into this world. Acculturation of that child, knowledge, understanding, discipline, creativity, vision, ambition, expectation, camaraderie, fellowship, gratitude, social feeling, social purpose, social progress. All these things follow and are entirely dependent upon the qualities of the races involved in the building of any nation or society. So much that goes wrong and goes right in this world can be traced directly back to the physical and, more importantly, the mental and emotional attributes of any given people on this earth. The greater capabilities for prosperity and happiness in our lives that flow directly from simply having a proper racial awareness of the world and the way things actually work are immense. Those with whom I have shared this understanding and to whom I have given this racial gift as it was given to me have expressed the same gratitude that I feel for the men who brought me along, Harold Covington being one of the most important, naturally. I want to emphasize that racial knowledge is elite knowledge, and it is a gift that you have to give to your fellow whites. Although it is very difficult to give this gift, each of us should be looking for opportunities to do just that. There are people out there who are thirsting for a true understanding of the way the world actually works so that they can interpret what they see around them on a daily basis that is so upsetting to so many of us. Most white people know what is happening to them, but they don't understand why, and they might be able to explain the flavor and feeling of it, but they don't have the knowledge base to truly explain the whys and wherefores of it. You can give them that, and in this season of gift giving, I urge you to look for those golden opportunities to help those you care about come to a better understanding of the world through the knowledge that you have and that we share as white nationalists of the front. There's a thirst out there for this knowledge and this understanding, which is denied us by our society. If you are able to supply that to someone that you love and that you care about, it is one of the greatest feelings in the world to receive their thankfulness in return and to know that you have done your part in courageously speaking up for the truth and for your race. So this I urge you to do this holiday season. Give the gift of racial awareness and racial understanding wherever you see that you might be able to. After that bit of heaviness and seriousness, let's have something light and fun, and then we'll close out the show.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Blixin' and blixin' and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringin', children singin', all is merry and bright. So hang your stockings and say your prayers, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got a bag that's filled with toys for boys and girls again. Hear those sleigh bells jingle, jangle, oh, what a beautiful sight. So jump in bed and cover your head, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He doesn't care if you're rich or poor, he loves you just the same. Santa Claus knows we're all God's children, that makes everything right. So fill your hearts with Christmas cheer, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He'll come around when chimes ring out that it's Christmas morn again. Peace on earth will come to all if we just follow the light. So let's give thanks to the Lord above, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight. Come Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blitzen, all his reindeers pulling on the rein. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. Hang your stockings and say your prayers, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Well, that's it for another Christmas show. As always, thanks for listening, comrades. Have a wonderful Merry Christmas, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Radio Free Northwest is brought to you by the Northwest Front, P.O. Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington 98310. You may also visit the party on our website at www.northwestfront.org. Until next week, freedom.